Does anybody have any questions? Yes. Yes, that's true. And I was kind of alluding to that in the sense that the mind of a deva and the mind of a deva-like mind in a human are sort of the same experience. You know, it's the same sort of consciousness. So this is, like in modern psychology, West Buddhist psychology, they can sometimes talk about it like, well, it's not really a deva, it's like deva-like states in, that you're developing here and now. And that's not wrong, but in the Buddhist teachings, there are also devas that exist, that actually exist, you know, in the universe. And as well as hell beings and animal beings and ghosts and things like that. And to me, that only makes sense also, that this whole cycle of existence, these different states, because just like human beings go through different ups and downs, so too there are different physical expressions of those mental states. Yes? Well, to me, the best thing you can do is just to recollect their existence. Actually, I would prefer to recollect the Buddha's that the Buddha existed. One thing that people can fall into is thinking that devas will help them, and that's not necessarily wrong. But I like this is Marcus Aurelius. He says, if the gods exist. And let's say I'm lusting after a certain woman and the gods exist. Better for me to ask that I be free of lust for this woman than that they give me this woman. That was his example. And if they can help me on any level, it's on that level that they can help me. And I sort of appreciate that. Like, I'm not looking for security or for possessions or for spouse or anything on the material level plane. What I'm looking for is goodness and truth. And if I'm in danger, what I would like to recollect is the Buddha, personally, because I have the highest faith in the Buddha. And frankly, although I do trust the deva's existence, there's certain something about the Buddha that is like, to me it seems there's just no question. None of this could exist without a Buddha. But whereas the devas, yeah, I kind of discern they're bound to exist. And I'm open to that possibility. As far as connecting with the feelings of devas, like when you're walking, just again, it's the sense of mystery. I think that's the best that I can do as a Westerner, is just to open up my mind. It's like, man, there's something more in this moment than meets the eye. Well, they're in a pretty happy place. So it's just like when you're in a 5-star hotel and there's like, you know, hot tubs and great food and a golf course outside. It's hard to really rouse yourself to see the danger of life, right? So to the devas, I mean, you know, 500 eons in bliss. It's pretty hard to remember that you're going to die. You know, in fact, this is a common problem they say with Brahmas, is that they wind up thinking they're eternal. You know, why not? They've been around so long, they've forgotten what it was like to be young. They just assume, I've been here forever. And, you know, all my friends have been here forever. Whatever it is. But I don't know if I'm not sure if it's ever actually said in the scriptures that they cannot get enlightened. And there's different kinds of...
The Buddha actually says some devas can be.
Yeah.
But it as a tendency, it tends not to. It's like in the... There's that great... You're just recollecting the first discourse of the Buddha, where the Buddha gives the discourse on the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path and... And Anya Kandanya sees the Dhamma and becomes the first being to be enlightened. And then all the devas are rejoicing and they're sending word up to all the other devas. And everybody's rejoicing, but nobody's reflecting on the Four Noble Truths.
Yeah, right. Like the disciples get enlightened in the Devas party, basically. Roughly speaking.
I was just talking with Ajahn Siddhartha. I mean, if you were talking about the connecting with the Devas, I was just talking with Ajahn Siddhartha yesterday, the day before, talking with Ajahn Siddhartha, who he and the other two monks up at the Pacific Hermitage walked from Mount Adams to Mount Hood, and so 16 days of walking, and then they went up to there's some place where Ajahn Kunadamba's been there. They finished the walk by going up to this Cooper Spur up around 9,300 feet on Mount Hood, and Ajahn Siddhartha said, he is somebody who does not, if you thought of Devanagasati, recollection of Devas, the first person who wouldn't come to mind would be Ajahn Siddhartha. He tends to be quite, it's very practical, straightforward, just no nonsense. But he was recounting, he said that, so we got up to that place and they made some kind of a chetty up there. So over the, this is the third year they've gone up there, make a chetty, and then they do the spiritual, the blessing chants. And he said, I've never felt it before like that. Just this incredible, powerful connection of something like, you know, the Devas and sort of some other beings that really has a lot of, just a very powerful feeling of protection and kind of blessing. It's really sweet because it's just sort of that kind of both in terms of the goodness of recollecting, dedicating merit, and then generating the thoughts of goodwill. These are, you don't really know who's going to tap in.
Julianne?
I like what you said about how contemplating helps to really open up your mind.
Contemplating what?
The Devas helps to really open up your mind. And for me, that means that, you know, if I can contemplate something that I can't see, can't touch, then it kind of opens my mind to think about awakening.
About what?
About waking up.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of waking
up. Yeah. Yeah. And not to mention, there's this kind of a very close overlap between opening your mind to what you don't understand and the presence of mindfulness. You know, because there's a presence of mind that is there when you're opening the mind. There's a certain kind of awakeness. There's energy. There's presence of mind. So it's a very, very wholesome state. I think one danger is that you don't want to get into too much proliferation around it. So sometimes people can get into proliferation around it where they just kind of start drifting into a whole sort of world of basically their own creations and just kind of fantasizing and daydreaming and interpreting everything as a coincidence and not to fall into that either. Yeah, well, I'll tell you honestly, like when you're feeling, it's important, okay, so sometimes we go through dark nights of the soul, as it were, when you're feeling alone and you feel like this universe is a cold, uncaring, selfish place, and it's good, that's a good time to recollect the Devas. There are beings that exist, powerful beings, good beings, numerous beings that are present on this planet and in this universe and in the whole structure of reality. There's benevolence that is there. if we simply A, open ourselves up to it, and B, also search for it. We have to kind of go in that direction. But we're not, when you feel alone and abandoned and kind of you can't, you know, whatever, that's a good time to just kind of, it helps give strength and kind of gives, brightens the mind. But again, like Ajahn Pasno said, whatever works. So it's, for some people, it's just, this is not going to work, and that's okay too. And it is interesting that this, we're doing a class like this, and it's nice because it's just, it's very rarely talked of. But it's true. It very rarely comes up in the scriptures, like as an actual recollection. And it does from time to time. But it doesn't get anywhere near the frequency, say, of Brahma Viharas. So loving kindness, compassion. The devas are spoken of a lot, but in terms of recollecting them as part of your practice, that's not really, doesn't get much attention. So to talk about this like this now, just remember that it's not a major part of the teachings, but it is it's a part, and it's a useful part, and it's an uplifting part, and it's a beautiful part. And it can be, it must be said that it's much easier to do. The more artificial your world, the world of clocks and calendars and schedules and TV and computers, that world is very much human-controlled and human-created. And it's, if you're immersed in that world, the whole world of the devas is much more difficult to kind of open up to. The mystery of life is much more difficult to open up to. Whereas you come out into the nature, there's a sense of something overflowing of existence and presence.
I ask myself, do I believe in karma? No doubt.
Uh-huh.
Why not balance that with the devas?
You know, and the nice reflection about that is because Mara often is said to influence our thinking. Like Mara comes in and kind of causes us to think in kind of unwholesome ways. And if you can just turn that around, and this is my intuition, this is not based in any scriptures, okay? That actually much of what we consider wholesome mind states, and there is that, if the devas exist on any plane, it's on that plane that they exist in my world, in my mind. So, like, I don't know. So there are, I'm sure many people have had these experiences where thoughts or ideas or abilities seem to just manifest, and it doesn't seem to make any sense how or why that happens. And likewise, unwholesome things. It's like, where on earth did that come from? And I'm sure a lot of time it's past karma, but it does sometimes seem to be an influence from the outside. Again, not to proliferate around this, but just a perception that I see. Well, absolutely, in the sense that they're both celestial. I think one thing is that angels, as far as I understand it, are eternal. Like, in the sense, from the Christian paradigm, angels are eternal. And God is eternal. So my sense is, like, say, if the Christian God exists, then it's probably he's misunderstood his temporality. If I may be so bold as to say so. But likewise with angels. I mean, basically any kind of celestial being that thinks they're eternal is under false understanding. And the devas, even, you know, the devas are very subject to delusion. Which is why sometimes I've heard in Thailand people say, look, you know, I've met this kind of soul being and he's giving me teachings on what... And no, don't go there. And if the being that you're talking to is for real, there's every chance he's just as deluded as you are, if not more. There's no reason why they have more wisdom. Not necessarily. So there's all kinds of different... Just like there's all kinds of different humans, there's all kinds of different devas. You know? Yeah, Danny. Maybe we should make this the last one if we're going to do it. Just a guided meditation.
I just wanted to say that maybe... one of the other reasons why this teaching isn't given very often is because it seems like it's a bit of a subtle thing to say, use this reflection in order to get your mind into a state that's bright so that you can kind of balance it and then move on to the goal. It'd be very easy to sort of slip off into looking for heaven.
Totally.
And so maybe that's another sort of danger in it that needs to be considered.
I think it can be said that the Buddha, there's many times in the scriptures where the Buddha encourages people wanting a heavenly rebirth. So it's not that wanting a heavenly rebirth is wrong. It's just that he also points out later that, you know, even you could go to that 500 eon heaven, really, literally for 500 eons or whatever the lifespan is, and then be reborn in hell afterwards. This is just possible because we have, karma is complex and we have, goes back a long time that we've been making actions. So just because you get security from a temporary security, just it's, it can be so long that it's like you can just hang up your hat and pretend it's eternal. And that incredible security of thinking you're there forever, that must be a real temptation for a deva to slip into that delusion. Okay. Well, okay, I said last question, but... Okay, squeeze one.
Because I know this conversation could go on for
ever.
Millions of eons.
Yes.
Still never resolve itself. You know, so for me, it actually is a question whether I can believe it or not, and it depends on where I'm placing my mind, I find. Because if I do take science on a certain level, that science is actually breaking down from atoms to going to quarks, to breaking that down to actually where they break things down and they don't see anything anymore. So there's emptiness. And so I'm saying, well, if this is me, here's solid and here's emptiness, what's in between that? So on that level, I can say there could be Davids. But then I also know my mind's able to create anything it wants to. And so it can create an idea of Davids or whatever they are. And so if I can create one and it brings me, as you say, towards enlightenment and wholesome goodness, then it's like, hey, I'll use that because here and now it's creating a better life for me. And so I can see that. And in all this practice, you know, the other thing that, again, when I come back to mind, hey, someone asked the Dalai Lama talking about death and, you know, worry about it or think about it. And he had said that, actually, I'm kind of curious about it because I'm wondering if everything that I've been teaching is true. And that he may find that when he moves through this realm to see if all that is true or not. So it's almost, he's, to me in a way, still pointing back, we don't know. So it's like, we can have conversations, but it's still, for me, it always points to, I don't know, and I know the mind is capable of making up whatever it is, and I also know it's capable of creating a connection, of changing things in our universe that just blows me away at times. How we can change the energy of mind when it comes together.
Right, but see, you can doubt anything, you know, as much as you want, and as much as you, it can produce all kinds of, like, doubt can be a way of opening the mind, but it can also be a way of scattering the mind. So with something like a faith-based practice, like, say, recollection of devas or recollection of the Buddha, it's sort of saying, trusting, it's the essence of trust. Turning to an essence, what does it mean to trust something? And then the stillness and serenity that is accompanied in that mind state. So trusting, bringing the devas to mind, opening your heart to that, trusting that there's something there that is magnificent, that's beautiful, developing that and then experiencing the stillness that can come from that.